Storyline with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside here to the VSiN Studios at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm, the VP of Operations here at the Circa Resort and Casino. Our pal Mike Pritchard, VSiN NFL analyst, will not be with us here on this show. He's celebrating his birthday, so we wish Pritchard a happy birthday.
Congratulations to making it to 54 for Mike, and I know he's enjoying it in some nice weather in a place a little far away from here. But
although the weather's nice here too,
we feel it's beautiful right now.
It really is.
Nevada Day. We're celebrating Nevada Day, but happy birthday, Mike. But we feel very naked without you. This is no longer a Friday football panel with only two.
It does feel weird how much space. I'm like, I'm used to going triple option, three wide here, but hey, we'll make do and try to have fun over these next 2 hours. We do have a couple of guests who will be joining us later on in 45 minutes. Adam Burke, VSiN Managing Editor, does a lot of great work for VSiN.com. He will join us to break down his college football plays. Also, do a little World Series with Adam as well. He wrote up on the World Series over at VSiN.com. That article just pushed out about an hour ago over on Twitter. He has a game one play. We'll get into it. Also get his serious thoughts as well between the Diamondbacks and the Rangers. Then at 11:30 West Coast time, 2:30 Eastern, I should say. Randy Mueller, former NFL general manager. He was an executive of the year in the National Football League, also now at The Athletic, and has the Football GM podcast, will join us. We'll talk a little trade deadline stuff, which teams he wants to see make moves, which players could be on the move, and also some of his thoughts on the marquee matchups here in week number 8. But let's start with Thursday Night Football last night. We saw the Buffalo Bills defeat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 24-18. Buffalo fails to cover despite ample opportunity to cover the 10-point spread. The game goes under the total. Surprise, surprise, a primetime under once again in the NFL. What were your thoughts with Buffalo getting back on the right track and winning last night?
Yeah, they got the win. And from a betting perspective, though, if you had the Bills minus 8, 8.5, 9, even 10, you had it felt you had the right side in this game. I mean, they fourth and one in the first quarter from the goal line, and they're in the shotgun with... What are you doing? You've got Josh Allen. You can't get him to run. I mean, maybe he doesn't bench as much as Hurts, but come on. He's got to be the second most likely candidate to be able to get a yard on a sneak and an incomplete pass. So you leave points on the board there. And then you're up 14 for a large portion of the game. And in the fourth quarter, you punt fourth and short from plus yardage twice. And then, you know, Tampa gets... You know, some fortuitous calls. I'm not saying they were bad calls, but you get bailed out on a couple fourth downs and you score. And all of a sudden, you're defending a Hail Mary to win the game when you probably should have never been in that spot. I mean, you're at home in short yard. That's the one thing about Buffalo. And I think it's been true for this window they've had of 3 or 4 years. It's hard in the playoffs when you get a team that you can't count on third and two or fourth and one.
Yeah. And that's been the knock.
It is, and they still are. They're still that way. You see it not at the goal line and then twice punting in those spots where 95% of NFL teams are going for it, even the most conservative head coaches. So it's good because I think for the great body of the game, they played awfully well, and they were the superior team. Tampa Bay is just, they're challenged offensively, and I don't think we saw anything we didn't expect last night.
Yeah, no, Tampa Bay, it feels, I don't want to say that the wheels are coming off, but it feels like it's sort of come back to earth after the 3-1 start. They've now lost three straight games and a couple injuries as well. They're getting banged up. So you would like to see them improve a little bit. I mean, the division is still out there for the taking. I know that Atlanta's right now sitting at 4-3, but they're not anything to really write home about, and it can easily lose a couple games to put Tampa right back into it and put New Orleans right back into that division.
The thing about it, the schedule is really favorable for them though, you know, and they can get by with Ridder, even, you know, going to Tampa Bay last week. They have another winnable spot against Tennessee. So if you got Atlanta, you know, at some time during the year, it's somewhere around $2, I think you have a really good ticket.
Yeah, 2-1 definitely is a good ticket. Yeah. I don't know if I would bet it right now here. But to your point, though, when you look at the box score from last night, Buffalo outgained them 427 to 302 yards per play. The Bills 6.3, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 4.9. But you mentioned the punts, though, and I had our producer Elliot Bowman put this into the rundown. The last four drives for the Buffalo Bills, they punted from their own 49, they punted from Tampa's 47, they punted from Tampa's 49, and then they punted from Tampa's 48. No other NFL team in the last 30 years has gotten within a yard of midfield on each of their last four drives of a game and punted on all four. It's a pretty bad beat, I feel like. Not like a massively bad beat, but a sneaky bad beat if you bet the Bills in this game.
It was. I mean, it just really was. There's every indicator of the game outside of the last 5 minutes of the game says you should have been covering this by 20 and not ahead of sweat. You would have had to have two scores to beat you. But, you know, they let them hang around and hang around and hang around from a spread perspective. And so it's a tough beat. But if you teased it, as a lot of people did leading into the weekend, you were able to get there.
It was a nice teaser leg for me. I got a couple teasers that are still open. We'll see if we can get home with those on Sunday to get ahead and cash a nice size weekend. But what do you make of this? Because our colleague, Kelly Bidlin, who you see on a numbers game, also see him out throughout the weekend on the live bet shows, he tweeted the NFL ATS trend. So these are against the spread trends. And I thought that this was interesting. Not that there was anything in terms of that you could bet, but I think it's just interesting to kind of take inventory of where we sit now that we're into week 8. And this is the stats. Away teams so far this season, 50.5% against the spread. Home teams then 49.5% against the spread. Favorites 50.5%. Dogs 49.5%. Away favorites, if they're 51.2% against the spread. Away dogs 50% against the spread. Home favorites 50%, and then home dogs 48.8%. It feels like we're all just flipping coins this NFL season. I don't know if we just don't know who's good, we don't know who's bad. The only trend that so far has some sort of like inclination of like, oh, we see where this is going, is the under. The under has cashed quite a bit because we know scoring has been down. That's sort of been the conversation over the last few weeks.
I think that conversation might be had with the, you know, the owners and the executives, and now we're seeing a lot more illegal contact penalties last week and then last night as well. So that's an interesting trend if you're playing totals, because those automatic first down penalties are very, very important. Just like offensive holding is the most detrimental penalty to the over, these illegal I know pass interference at 60 yards is, but these insidious little 5 yard penalties that get you first downs on third and long or second and long make a huge difference in the total of the game.
The unders are 65-41 so far this season. Like, you would expect that to correct itself at some point. Like you said, maybe the league will have the meetings among themselves saying like, hey, like we got to get scoring back up because that's what the lifeblood of our league is. And that's what everybody gets excited about. And they don't want the conversation to be about how the play has been pretty poor offensively. And I was actually thinking last night, because when we saw Buffalo go ahead and line up in that third and goal and even fourth and goal, both downs in shotgun from the 1 yard line, I said, you know what would actually fix offensive football is if we just banned the shotgun formation. if we just said, hey, shotgun is on a 4 month hiatus, it'll come back in 2024, but every play must be run under center. Because I feel like the defenses, when they see shotgun, they're like, all right, well, let's sit back in too high, let's limit the big play. And now you're forcing these offenses to go ahead and go 11 plays, 75 yards, where it's hard to do that without getting that back-breaking holding penalty.
Oh, you'd have to reteach a whole generation of kids how to take the snap under center. It's like base running. It seems like they don't teach it in baseball anymore either. It's so horrific.
get the shotgun and Michael Lombardi, he's talked about it, who this show is obviously named after. He's talked about how shotgun is just, teams are hanging out in it way too much and the defenses have adjusted. So now we got to zig when they zag and go back under center, because I think that's where a lot of the big plays, I mean, you look at the big play offenses, Miami's under center more than most teams. The Niners are under center more than most teams. And those are the offenses that are making big plays consistently, at least. So we'll see what happens there. But let's get to some of the other news and notes, though, from around the National Football League here. And we saw one in the Meadowlands to where Daniel Jones has been ruled out for this game against the New York Jets. This will now be his third straight missed game. Tyrod Taylor will get the start. And I think the bigger news with this is that head coach Brian Daboll declined to confirm if Jones will be back this season. Like, this is the first time he's ever talked about how there's uncertainty if Jones will come back. He's dealing with the neck injury that he banged up in their loss to the Miami Dolphins. But if this is Tyrod the rest of the way, is there much of a drop off here for the Giants?
No, I think they're better. I'm just telling you from the sample size we've seen so far, they should have won the game in Buffalo on Sunday night. And, you know, I know Daboll screams at Taylor because he audibles to, but as Michael said yesterday on the show, he gave him two plays. Why give him two plays and let him go to the run? Why even give him the play? You're running this play. And then, they beat a decent Commanders team. I think the Commanders are an okay team. They have, a lot of talent, obviously, on the defensive side of the ball. Howell's been all right, too. Just haven't been able to protect him. But they win as a home dog there. This is, I keep looking at this game saying, geez, I think I want to take the whole field goal here in this spot.
I mean, it's interesting. It's Zach Wilson having to win by margin, which is like, I keep telling myself, I don't know if I can get behind that.
And he took the bye week and went to Utah. I mean, what is he thinking? is all that about? They're so angry.
That's New York radio in a nutshell. I was like, it's the guy's bye week. can he not go back home? I don't know what's going on. I'm sure he still has the playbook. I mean, these things are digital these days. Like, you can still go over tape and all that stuff while he's in Utah. But I mean, hey, maybe we should downgrade the Jets into this game since Zach Wilson took a little bit of time off and took his girlfriend out to Utah. But I'm with you. I still think that there's a slight downgrade from Daniel Jones to Tyrod, but I don't think it's massive to where like it would move you off of the key number of three or anything like that. Like, I think three is a pretty fair number in this game. What do you think of the total? I mean, if you have Tyrod Taylor against that Jets defense, it's a little scary.
It's right. I mean, that's what it should be. It should, you know, when you get totals under 38 in the NFL, those are low totals.
Yeah.
And that's a low total in this game. But I mean, obviously the Jets want to run the ball as well. Even though they have Saquon, they're not really explosive, right? These are two teams that you're going to put drives together unless you have, you know, sudden change and defensive scores or special team scores. So, I mean, I couldn't play it over at 36.5. I think that's about right. This is a game that probably, you know, you're looking at a 12 possession game.
Which of these teams, Jets or the Giants? Because this is actually a sneaky big game. Which of these teams do you think has the best chance to make the playoffs?
Oh, the Jets. I think the Jets do because of their defense will keep them in a lot of games. And I think Breece Hall's a really talented kid. I mean, he's going to be Offensive Rookie of the Year until he got hurt last year. And, you know, he's shown flashes of that. That's why I didn't understand they only got him 4 carries against Dallas in that game.
Didn't make a whole lot of sense. And he was upset about it, too. He made it known there in that loss there. If the Jets make the playoffs, can you imagine that without Aaron Rodgers? And the narrative that will be surrounding Robert Saleh, who's done a pretty good job so far this season. We'll get to the big game in the Bay Area on the other side. We're just warming up here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm here on a Football Friday. And to continue the football discussion and also squeeze in a little bit of fall classic talk, we're bringing in our guy, Adam Burke, VSiN Managing Editor, also co-host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, and also the baseball podcast as well here at the Sports Betting Network. The man that does a lot of stuff for VSiN.com as well. Adam, we appreciate you joining us here this morning. Let's talk college football and your beloved Ohio State Buckeyes, who are 14.5-point favorites on the road in Madison. How do you see this one playing out here between the Buckeyes and the Badgers?
Yeah, good to be on with you guys here. A lot going on in my world. So thanks for listing all the things that I'm doing here. I appreciate that. I mean, as far as Ohio State and Wisconsin goes, I mean, I think this game would have been a lot more interesting if Tanner Mordecai was able to play for Wisconsin. With broken hand, he's out for the year. And honestly, he didn't seem to fit all that well into Phil Longo's offense anyway. Wisconsin was not that explosive of a team with him. And they're certainly not going to be an explosive team without him. Braylon Locke, 2 games in place of Mordecai, 36 of 71, 362 yards. I just don't see Wisconsin scoring a whole lot of points against Ohio State. It's all Braylon Allen right now because Ches Malusi, the backup running back, was hurt earlier on in the year. So he's just going to have to be a workhorse in this game. And I think against a physical Ohio State front, I don't see Wisconsin getting chunk plays. I don't see them moving the ball. I don't see a letdown from Ohio State here. I like the Buckeyes laying 14.5. The question is if the offense is going to be good enough, but Kyle McCord seems to have finally realized, I'm going to throw the ball to Marvin Harrison a lot, and that's going to help us. So I think the Buckeyes win and cover this game, and I think under 14.5 team total for Wisconsin, which I've seen some other people, including our own Tyler Shoemaker, like, I agree with that play as well.
That's the way I played it, the team total, because I just worry a little bit about the letdown spot here. And, you know, it's strange in Madison at night. Yep. Camp Randall is a tough spot. And Ohio State's gone there as number one in the country several times before and lost. We saw Houston last week give Texas everything they wanted and more. Adam, they go to the Little Apple, where I think Stormy's going to be tomorrow.
Is she?
Covering that game, catching 17.5. Are you backing the Fighting Holgersons?
I am backing the Fighting Holgersons. And, yes, Stormy will be there in Manhattan, of course, has to drive to Kansas City to fly out because there's like six flights a day into the Manhattan airport in and out. But I like Houston in this game. I think 17.5 is just too much. Donovan Smith's played really, really well in this Holgorsen offense. And honestly, last week, they probably should have beaten Texas. I know Quinn Ewers got hurt in that game, but Houston got a bad third down spot on their final possession. The fourth down play was a mess. So if they had gotten a better spot, because I think he had the first down, they probably score. They likely go for two. With the way that Texas's defense was playing, they very well might have gotten it. So I just think 17.5 is too much here. I like Kansas State. I think they're a solid football team, but Houston's got that offense rolling. Holgorsen's kind of got that gambler mentality sometimes. So I think an early kickoff, 11 a.m. local time in Manhattan, going to be kind of sleepy for the home team. I like Houston here getting a three-score head start.
Yeah, that was a brutal spot there on that third and one. I remember watching that game. Had nothing invested. I was like, man, that's rough for the Houston backers there. We're hanging out here with Adam Berg, VSiN managing editor, also the co-host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, and also the VSiN Daily Baseball Bets Podcast as well. Check out all his work over at VSiN.com. Let's get one more college football play before we transition over to the Fall Classic here, and that's Air Force and Colorado State. Not the sexiest game on paper. Right now, the Falcons, 14-point favorites, total 46.5. What do you like?
Yeah, this probably won't be a sexy game at all, but Air Force is a top 20 team, and they're going on the road here to Fort Collins. And the big thing to me here in this game, Femi, is weather. And, you know, we're getting to that time of the year where you're going to start getting snow in some of the higher elevations. You're going to start getting more rain across the country, more wind as well, as we've seen over the last few weeks. But this is a game where you're expected to get a good amount of snowfall during the game. The forecast I saw yesterday said there could be about 1.5 inches of snow during the game, not to mention a little bit of wind. It's going to be very cold. And as we know, Colorado State with Jay Norvell, they want to throw the football. And Braden Faller-Nicolosi, the quarterback for them, I think he's a very promising guy going forward. But three-star kid out of Texas, didn't start last year, hasn't played in this kind of really ugly winter-esque environment. So I think Colorado State's going to struggle to score points here in a game where they're going to have limited possessions anyway. And Colorado State's run defense has been pretty decent this year. So I like the under 47 in this game. It's ticked down to 46.5 at some places, but I think this is a stone cold, pardon the pun, under with some bad weather there in Fort Collins.
Adam, if there was no weather in this game, would you like Colorado State catching 14?
Yeah, I think if weather wasn't a factor, I'd be interested in Colorado State because they are pretty effective at throwing the ball. The only problem is that Faller-Nicolosi, I think he's thrown 11 or 12 picks this season. And if you squander any possessions against the Service Academy, it puts you behind the eight ball. So that would be the risk reward for me. But I think if there was no weather, I would be interested in Colorado State because I think they're a pretty decent team that just has been marred by inconsistency this season.
All right, let's switch over to baseball. Obviously, you do more work on baseball than anybody at the network. You write a daily column with your plays. And we've reached the point of the World Series. Before we get into your bet tonight, your bet for the series, any props you have, I want to ask, to me, there seems to be this overreaction of baseball's got to change its playoff format. This is unacceptable, a 5 versus a 6. We got to tear it all down. It's not right. The teams don't have enough advantage that win their divisions. I say baseball's always a sport about who's hot and who the pitcher is. And if you enjoy the game, enjoy the World Series and stop complaining.
Yeah, baseball's just a high variance sport, especially in small sample sizes. I mean, you'll see many instances throughout the course of the season where a really, really bad team, a bottom feeder, sweeps a really good team in a 3-game series. It just happens. And you're definitely going to see that in the playoffs because, as you mentioned, you know, I mean, you've got teams that, you know, are going to play well in short bursts, teams that aren't. A lot of it comes down to hitting with runners in scoring position in those smaller sample sizes. And that's what's carried Texas here throughout the postseason. They're the best offense in the playoffs in terms of batting with runners in scoring position. Arizona actually has not been, but much like their other previous series, they're facing a team where they're the inferior offensive team, and they've been able to overcome that throughout the course of the postseason here. Yeah, you know what? The network execs are not thrilled with this series. I don't think the casual observer will be watching, but baseball is, you know, it's not the NBA. It's not where the chalk holds up almost all the time. So this season's been extreme in terms of underdogs, but hey, this is what we've got. And credit to these two teams, these two coaching staffs and front offices. 2 years ago, these two teams combined for 212 losses And now here they are in the World Series.
Yeah, maybe it's not the sexiest matchup on paper, but there's a lot of fun young players in this game. I mean, Corbin Carroll from my old neck of the woods in Seattle, he's tremendous. Josh Young on the other side, Evan Carter's now blossomed into this superstar player. Like, it's a really fun series. In terms of who you like in this series and the betting odds, at DraftKings, Texas minus 170 on the series price, Diamondbacks plus 145. Any play for you there on series price before we get to your game one look?
Nothing on the series price because I've been a three-time Diamondbacks doubter already. I had -1.5 with Milwaukee in the wild card round. I bet against them. I took the Dodgers big price. I took the Phillies big price. I don't have the heart to do it again. I can't doubt this team again, especially because they've evolved and they've really, you know, adapted in the playoffs here, specifically a guy like Brandon Pfaadt, who was not good in his game one wild card start. His other three starts have been excellent. So, you know, the Diamondbacks have really evolved as the postseason's gone along, and it's past time that I respect that.
I want to throw out a couple of long shots for World Series MVP, and I'm going to look at the Diamondback side of it. And you just mentioned Brandon Pfaadt. I mean, the team is a whole different team with Pfaadt as a three starter the way he's thrown the ball the last three starts. So I would look at Pfaadt if he could win two games in this series, which is not inconceivable because it's, you know, there's no big names on the offensive side of the ball for Arizona. And here's another one at a really long price is Ginkel. Ginkel could have a role in four or five games here. I mean, let's face it, the Phillies' best hitters couldn't hit him. And that was a big part of why they couldn't win these games late. The Arizona Diamondback bullpen was better than Philadelphia, which I never thought would have happened.
So the problem with Pfaadt is he's going to pitch game three and then game seven. So does this go to a seventh game where he's able to pitch twice? That would be the concern there. Look, I mean, I think in game three, going up against Max Scherzer, who is clearly compromised, you know, Pfaadt definitely has a good shot, especially being able to pitch at home. He won't have to be in a hostile road environment, although that didn't really matter to him in the last series. So that would be the concern, is that you need a long series for Pfaadt to pitch twice. Now, I guess he could theoretically be available in relief in a game six, you know, game five, something like that, if they need him. But for him to pitch twice in this series, you're asking for game seven. And if he won it on the road, then certainly he'd get some consideration.
Yeah, Pfaadt right now 65-1 over at DraftKings to be World Series MVP. Real quick, Adam, who do you like for game one here? What's the play?
The play for me is the first five over 4.5. I think Zach Gallen has been really bad in the playoffs. I kind of expected this coming into the postseason. He did not have a good second half in terms of some of his underlying metrics. And now the fastball looks flat, gave up five homers across two starts against the Phillies on his last two outings. And Eovaldi is just kind of pitching over his skis a little bit. So I like first five over 4.5 tonight. As far as a side, lean Rangers, but I've doubted the Diamondbacks enough.
All right, maybe we'll get some early fireworks over there in Big D down in Arlington. He is Adam Berg, VSiN Managing Editor. Make sure you check out VSiN Daily Baseball Bets, also the VSiN College Ball Betting Podcast, and all his work at VSiN.com. Thanks for all the stuff, Adam.
Thank you.
Have a good one, guys.
All right. Hour number two is coming up next. We go back to the gridiron.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Timmy Abbefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
With all four major sports in action, there's no better time of the year to be a sports bettor. And with our new Sports Equinox special, there's no better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now and you'll get VSiN Pro access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120. And it includes daily best bets, unlimited access to our betting splits, plus our exclusive betting content for the MLB playoffs, college football, the rest of the NFL season, March Madness, the NBA and NHL regular seasons, and the NFL draft. Don't miss this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up now. Only $120 and you get all of that stuff. That is an unbelievable deal. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abbefe, Mike Palm, joining us in 15 minutes. Randy Mueller, former NFL general manager, will help us break down the trade deadline and what he thinks of a couple of these marquee matchups that we have in week number 8. But let's talk a little bit of teasers. And we discussed it a little bit last segment here, but I want to kind of break it down further here because I think this could be a good week to tease.
Oh, it's a great week to tease.
It's a fantastic one. I mean, I usually don't tease early in the week, but Sunday night I put some Buffalo teasers in. So we at least have those legs in, and we've teased it with the Baltimore Ravens down to 2. And then also the Chargers. I went with Staley down to 2.5.
How about the Lions on Monday night? You haven't used them yet in the teaser?
I like the Raiders in the game.
You think the Raiders will win straight up in the game?
No, I don't think they can win straight up.
You think they're going to lose by 1 or 2?
I like the 8.5. I don't like teasing against game like that games that I took points in. Just, I'm shooting for trying to thread the needle here and all that stuff with a big price. Like, I didn't really like that, but I do like the Raiders plus eight.
Did you downgrade the Lions that much off the performance in Baltimore?
No, I don't downgrade them. I think
you upgrade the Raiders off the performance in Chicago.
I think the market downgraded the Raiders off the performance in Chicago, but that was with their bad quarterback. That game was with Hoyer and O'Connell. Now it is with Jimmy Garoppolo. And like with Jimmy Garoppolo, they haven't been rated this poorly against. I mean, Detroit is really good, but the Raiders were what, 8-point dogs or 7-point dogs against Buffalo on the road?
Yeah.
And now they're supposed to be 10 against Detroit? Like, is Detroit?
Yeah.
Are they power rated better than Buffalo?
Well, I think they're better than Buffalo.
Well, I mean, I think that's your, but I mean, from a power rating standpoint, I mean, look at the Super Bowl odds. You know, that'll tell you that Buffalo is the higher power rated team.
What's the odds on Buffalo now? Detroit was 14-1 before they went into Baltimore and
got shellacked.
Like every NFC team gets whacked by the COVID kid Lamar Jackson, okay? COVID kid. Meanwhile, they're really good. Baltimore's they're really, really good, Femi. That team.
They are good.
No, and they're healthy. They were healthy, and Detroit didn't have any running backs, and they put pressure on Goff. They never let him get comfortable. But that looked like they were playing a Division III team. I mean, that first half was the most dominating first half of football I've seen a team play all year.
First four drives, touchdown, 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 touchdown.
And they'd get it's first and 20. They had no problem. Here's 18 yards. Every time Detroit made a play, the next play they'd get 20 and get a first down. Yeah. They could never get him off the field.
So to your point, in the Super Bowl market, Buffalo 14-1 after last night's win. Detroit 15-1. So maybe the market is now saying that they're rated similarly.
Similar.
So maybe that's where we sit here. I disagree, though. So I went ahead and took the 8.5 there. I think with Jimmy Garoppolo, we get a better showing from the Las Vegas Raiders. Because like, everyone's like, oh, it's a bounce back for Detroit. Like, the Vegas Raiders just got they got drilled in Chicago. Like, why can't it be a bounce back for them? Like, they're not allowed to bounce back? Only one team?
You would say, well, they get to go home where they play so well. They did. They give 180 points to Seattle every year when they're at home. I mean, I don't know that that's that big of a home field advantage for Detroit. That's one of the things when you go and you try to evaluate the futures on it. You know, it's I would say, one of the lower third home field advantages in the league.
I wouldn't be scared. If the Niners had to go to Detroit, lay it.
Philly too.
Yeah,
I feel the same way.
Yeah, sorry to Lions fans. I know they're around here a lot of the time. over at the D where I do the Sunday show, it's a Lions watch party out there.
Well, we've had it before Circa was ever. You know, the D is one of the things it stands for is Detroit. So we always prioritize the Lions game with the audio for many, many years there. So we cultivated that following.
It was the roars were not as loud last Sunday. I'll put it that way. Usually it's loud, not last Sunday. But let's talk some teasers in the NFL. So you like the Lions as a teaser leg this week?
I do.
That's a spot that you would look
at? I like it better than the Chargers on Sunday night, which everybody will. I think you'll see that Sunday-Monday combination a lot from the better.
Primetime teaser.
Mm-hmm.
Are you back in the secret Bajent man?
Maybe it's my anti-Fields bias that making me feel better about...
You've upgraded them.
Well, the team looked like they had some purpose to it. And I have to write the guy's name down on Twitter that did this film breakdown about how much quicker he gets back at a 5-7-step drop than Fields, which gives him obviously more time. And I thought he was effective with his legs. Obviously, it's a short sample size, and now they have tape on him playing in the NFL, not, you know, for Shepherd College, you know, against the Colorado School of Mines or whatever. But the kids got a lot of confidence. They just seemed, you know, and the Raiders were lethargic, to your point with Hoyer. They were just, you know, I thought maybe McDaniels get fired at halftime. I mean, it was just... They looked so bad, right? I mean, it was an kind of embarrassing performance, I thought, at least in the first half in that game. So I can't get by Staley. You can't get me to take the Bears with point. You remember, I bet the Bears every which way you can under this year. So you're not going to tell me. Their lines are still bad. They have a bad O-line, a bad D-line. You can't get around that. So, I mean, if Staley were to lose this game,
I think he's done.
Spanos is cheap and they don't want to. He's got to go.
I think he's done. Because like this is a national televised game, Sunday Night Football. If they lose this game and all of social media is just killing Brandon Staley, because they're not going to kill Herbert. Like, Herbert's safe. He's safe.
He gets 12 years.
He's a made man. He's a made man despite zero playoff wins.
He won the Rose Bowl.
I guess he has a big win somehow. Yeah. But no playoff wins. And he gave up a 27-point lead, by the way. But that's neither here nor there. Staley's going to get the wrath if they lose this game. Like he's like, it's over for him. So I went ahead and teased it. So I have them at 2.5 paired with Buffalo from last night. So hopefully that is able to get home.
Would you use him if you were still alive in Survivor and you had the choice? Let's say you're not going to use Philadelphia. You're not going to use Dallas because of and you're not going to, right?
Detroit Thanksgiving.
Detroit. So you're not going to use those teams. Who would you use this week? Would you use, if you had the Chargers and the Ravens still available as choices? You're not going to use Kansas City. Let's say you're holding them for Christmas as well. Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at the big favorites. Would you go in with the Chargers?
Because there's so many people still left, mm-hmm. and the Seahawks, by the way, got everybody home last week here. If I had Seattle available, I think this is the week I'd play Seattle.
You would against Cleveland.
I would against Cleveland.
That's interesting.
Against a backup quarterback at home. Yep. Just because, like, I mean, there's so many people left. I wouldn't want to lose with the masses. Like, that's been my whole theme with Survivor.
You did. You were always zigging.
I was always zigging. Yep. I think you zig until we get down to, like, I don't know.
We did lose a third of the field. We lost a third of the field last week. It was amazing.
Who was
down to 1,200? Oh, the Bills.
The Bills did them in.
But there were a little chunk plays too. I mean, Tampa. One of the guys that had 10, all 10 on Tampa last week. So now there's seven that still have 10 left. But it was just a little chunk play and a lot of road teams. It was surprising. The Raiders, people had the Raiders at the Bears, even with the backup quarterback. So somehow we lost like 550 entries last week. So we're down to 1,200.
That's crazy. To answer your question though, like if I had to choose among the big favorites, I think I would go Chargers because I wouldn't want them at any other point in the season.
Yeah. Amal said that too. And he said, and I want to be able to use Baltimore later. So
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you can trust Baltimore a little bit more and there's more spots to kind of pick and choose. And also I think backing Baltimore now, like I get it, like they're a good chance they're going to win. I have them a teaser. I think they're going to win the game, but I just would be a little bit uncomfortable putting my Survivor ticket on a team that's coming off like a 99th percentile victory against Detroit. Like that's about as good as Baltimore is ever going to play. And I just wouldn't want to use my Survivor play on a team like the week after they go ahead and perform that way.
Remember a few years ago on a Monday night, they went and played the Rams.
Oh, and they destroyed them.
Yeah. It reminded me of that game where they just scored a touchdown every time they touched the ball.
That was the night that Lamar pretty much locked up MVP. Mm-hmm. Like I think it was like 40-something to like 6 or something like that.
And the Rams were like catching 4 and everybody was on the Rams at home. We're going to catch 4. And
home dog in prime time.
That was Goff Jackson, the first version.
We should have known.
Yeah, we should have known.
How did we not bring this up last week? The Lamar versus Goff trend. Lamar's just going to drill his team once again. What do you think of the home dogs? Because I like the Packers as a teaser. Pittsburgh, would you tease them? Or do you think that this Cinderella run can have a messy ending?
Maybe I wouldn't mind teasing them.
Okay.
I think they have a good shot to win the game. Would you? Well, the game's at 3 already, so you wouldn't.
Well, what about?
I like the Giants in this game. I'm talking myself into the Giants. I'm probably going to use them in the contest.
Take a money line. I mean, honestly, like I'd say take the 3 as well, but also put a little bit on the money line. Yeah. Would you use any like the non-traditional teasers? I know, I get it. Long teasers, tease through 3, and we get it.
Yeah.
But like, would you ever tease Kansas City? Like, how does Denver win outright? Like, I like Denver. I took +8.5 Sunday night, but how does Denver actually win the game?
I don't know. I mean, we saw this version of this game before.
Like and 2.5 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Right. Yeah. And Denver didn't move the ball until late in the game. Right. They were dominated and somehow they got a score and that they don't win the game. They're not winning the game. So I don't mind that as well. I mean, there's a lot of games you could tease. Will the Cowboys get to 6.5 or 7? You could tease them if they did at that point too. So we haven't got to your thoughts on your team yet this week.
Fresh off the bye.
Seems like they haven't played in a month.
It does feel like that. But you know what? I'm glad for that because I'm tired of them embarrassing me in public.
Oh, God. Come on. It's never personal.
Hey, Monday night against the Chargers, if they lost that game, it would have been personal.
they had a penalty on like 11 straight plays, I think.
Yeah. We're still trying to clean it up after 2021. Randy Mueller joins us next.
This is the Lombardi Line with Mike Palm and Mike Pritchard. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 to pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Mike Palm here hanging out at the Circa Resort and Casino. And joining us now to break down the NFL and the trade deadline that is approaching quickly Tuesday afternoon. We're bringing in Randy Mueller, former NFL general manager, was an executive of the year in 2000 and has a podcast over at The Athletic, the Football GM podcast. We encourage everybody to go ahead and check that out. Randy, we appreciate you joining us here this morning. Once again, you recently wrote a column about the five deals that you would like to see at the trade deadline here. And I want to ask you about the quarterback one, because I thought this was fascinating. It really jumped out to me. You think that some teams should be a little bit proactive and go out and maybe try to find a potential future QB?
Well, I don't think it's for everybody, but I do think if you had someone you felt really good about last year during the draft and you had no way to acquire him, I always think regardless of position, you go back and look at your notes and make sure there's, you know, a need at one position, but it's a chance to get a jump on next year. And in the article you're talking about, I mentioned Hendon Hooker, who was a third round pick of the Lions, who I actually loved coming out of the draft last year. We all know he has an ACL injury. He's not going to play this year. So it's a little bit of a luxury, but you might be able to acquire him, because the fact is Jared Goff's going to get re-signed. He's played really good for the Lions. So kind of looking ahead a little bit, Hooker may be expendable. There's no reason that Detroit would have to trade him, that's for sure. But sometimes you make it a little better offer than what they had given to get him. You might get a bite on the other end.
Randy, I want to talk about a couple of the big names that are out there and what you think are the actual likelihood they get moved. And from the quarterback perspective, Kirk Cousins, is Minnesota going to sign him after the year? Are they willing to move him now on a team that looks like it could be in the playoffs? It would be if it started today and if you look at their schedule. And then obviously the other one, Derrick Henry in Tennessee.
Well, I think starting with Cousins, I don't think he gets moved. I just don't think it makes sense. For one thing, he has a no-trade clause in his contract, and I don't know that he's going to want to go somewhere else from a business standpoint, learn a new offense, put at risk his marketability at a place that he's unsure of. If nothing else, we've learned that he is a disciplined, somewhat square personality that doesn't do great with change. And so I don't think he's ever going to sign off on a deal that's going to take him on a wild goose chase across the country when he's going to be an impending free agent in 2.5 months. I just don't see that happening, nor do I think his representation agency would ever think that's a good idea. The other option is, or the other thing is, Minnesota has no options. They don't have a backup. They don't have a plan for the future. So I think you're going to see Kirk Cousins ride it out and stay with Minnesota the rest of the year. I think in Derrick Henry's case, he makes some sense for Tennessee to move. We've already seen Tennessee move off of Kevin Baird, one of their leaders on defense and a giant voice in the locker room. I think they're in a little bit of a betwixt between mode of a retool and trying to make Mike Vrabel happy and that he wants to win right now. I think a guy like Derrick Henry in this day and age of 7-on-7 offenses, I think he comes into a particular locker room. Let's just say maybe a Cleveland or a Baltimore where they want to run the ball, where an offensive line is in place like in Cleveland. He's a closer. He's a really good downhill physical presence. Some of these teams have gotten a little soft, I think would be benefit from adding a guy like Derrick Henry. Now, his cap number is a little bit problematic, but it's only half of what it was when the season started. And as we all know, we can do some cap gymnastics to find room for things that we really want.
We're hanging out here with Randy Mueller, former NFL general manager, was the executive of the year in 2000, now has a podcast, the Football GM podcast, over at The Athletic. Well, Randy, you mentioned Minnesota and Kirk Cousins, how, hey, he has a no-trade clause, they wouldn't trade him. What about Danielle Hunter, their pass rusher, who leads the league in sacks right now? If you were Kwesi Adofo-Mensah, the general manager of the Vikings, now that your team is back into the wild card race after Monday night's win, like, how do you sort of navigate these next 5 days? Like, do you still trade Hunter if the right offer appears? Or is it off the boards and you try to go ahead and move forward to maybe make a playoff run?
Well, I don't think you can be swayed by one or two games, Femi. I think you know your team really well as a GM and you don't really trade based on your record. I do think in his case, and Danielle Hunter has been a good player and as you mentioned, leads the league in sacks this year. His contract is about the most convoluted issue oriented deal I've ever seen. There is tons of dead money available or that the Vikings are going to have to take on when they do move him. There is some benefit to this year trading him as opposed to waiting a year from now. he's going to have a giant number that's going to count against the Vikings, whether he's with them or not in the future. Having said that, I think there'll be a lot of teams that want him. If he walks, there'll be a compensatory pick available, probably a third round pick, but they won't get that for a year removed. So they wouldn't get that until 2025. If someone were to offer me something like the Broncos got for Von Miller a couple of years ago, maybe it's a 2 and a 3 or a 3 and a 2, I'd probably have to look at it. I don't think the Vikings think that they are a Super Bowl team. I really don't. Based on the questions they have had up until last week, I think they know their team. So it wouldn't surprise me if Hunter got moved, and I actually think he would be a great get for several teams in the NFL.
Randy, one of the areas you addressed in your five things you'd like to see was the Packers and the need for a slot receiver for Jordan Love. Who are some of the options out there that you would look at? And then a second part to this question, how have you assessed Love so far?
Well, I think not only do the Packers need a slot receiver, they need a veteran receiver. They may have one of the youngest offenses in the league by age. I know they have one of the youngest, if not the youngest, wide receiver room. And they've banked on the fact that these guys would grow and get better. But I think one of the things about being a good GM is you got to be able to pivot, right? And I think everybody knows that hope is not a plan, and that they lost a couple of veterans, not only Aaron Rodgers, but Alan Lazard, Randall Cobb. They've lost some leadership in that offensive room. So I thought adding a slot receiver does two things. It helps Jordan Love find a recognizable target sooner in his progressions. And two, it gives that veteran or that rookie room or the young developing wide receiver room somewhat of a guy to look up to. And the guy I thought made the most sense was Hunter Renfrow, who's in Vegas, who's 2 years removed from a 100 catch season, who has joined the witness protection program, I guess, because he's not to be found in any stat sheet in any film that I've watched. So he plays very little. In fact, has 6 catches. So I think there's going to be a little competition for him. I think he will be an option for a lot of teams, but I thought Green Bay could sure use him or another veteran like that who can help drag these young guys who were waiting to develop and maybe good players, but help them along the way.
Randy, there's talks about how Howie Roseman, the general manager for the Eagles, might not be done after acquiring Kevin Byard from the Tennessee Titans. So the Eagles, we know, are going to be buyers over these next 4 or 5 days. Who else should be a buyer, or who else have you been hearing might be looking to buy at the deadline?
Well, I think you've hit on one thing we know for sure is that Howie Roseman is not going to sit on his hands. I think he has done an awesome job in putting together that team and always having his phone lines open and working deals. He can always say no at the end of these conversations, but he finds ways to improve his team where others don't. I think if you don't, as a GM, Femi, look at every aggressive way to make your team better, you're doing a disservice to your guys in your locker room. I think there should be a lot of teams that are beating the bushes. I think any team that's kind of on the edge that needs to give their team a shot in the arm. Now, it's harder for some because they're up against it cap-wise. But a team like New Orleans, a team like New England, these teams are kind of teetering on going either way. They almost have to try to go make a deal, in my opinion. They need some influx of, hey, we need to do better. We're trying everything we can to do upstairs. We understand the injuries have been an issue in some of these places, but we're trying to upgrade as much as we can. And I think the message you send to your locker room and to your coaches as a GM that's aggressive goes a long ways in the NFL nowadays.
Yeah, maybe we'll see what happens. I know Jerry Jones for the Dallas Cowboys, he was asked about if they would go ahead and make a trade and like that. He said, hey, we're not going to do anything that's super aggressive, but the phone is always open. So we'll see what happens down there in the Dallas. Real quick here, Randy, before we let you go, wanted to ask you about the marquee game of the day, Bengals and the 49ers. We're still uncertain as to whether Brock Purdy is going to be starting. He's still in the concussion protocol, but there's a chance he might be able to clear that by kickoff Sunday afternoon. The Niners are the favorites, 4-point favorites, total 43.5. We got about a minute left. Do you buy into the Bengals being better out of the bye like they were a year ago, or are there some troubling signs that Cincinnati might not be the team we thought they were this summer?
Well, I definitely don't think they're the team we thought they would be. Now, Joe Burrow seems to have been more healthy the last couple weeks, and obviously that's progress. I think they're a little disjointed up front, and that's still a little problematic for me. I think they're walking into a hornet's nest, Femi, in San Francisco. They've lost two in a row. They're going to be downright salty, and I don't think that's a good sign for the Bengals. I like San Francisco to kind of come back and really get after Cincinnati. San Francisco lost tough games by field goals the last 2 weeks, really, for the most part, way better than the teams that they've played, just haven't come out on the right results. So I don't care who plays quarterback for San Francisco. I really don't. If it's Sam Darnold, so be it. I like the 49ers at home, and I think there's a little bit of a revenge in their mind no matter who they play. I just think the Bengals are going to be one of those teams that kind of sees the result of how good San Francisco's defense really is.
Yeah, San Francisco has been awesome at home, especially. They're coming off back-to-back losses. He is Randy Mueller. Check out his work over at The Athletic, the Football GM podcast, former NFL general manager and executive of the year in 2000. Randy, we appreciate the time as always, man. Be well. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's out there. Hornet's nest out there in Santa Clara, Mike Palmer. We'll see. Maybe. I kind of would lean Niners as well in this game here, but we'll break it all down on the other side to wrap up the show here. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network.